from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The summer movie season has arrived. Blockbusters, monster movies, romantic comedies, and family movies are all competing for box office dollars. But are any worth watching? This week on Register Radio, we discuss the best choices for summer movies with Register film critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis. And then, seven priests ordained in 7 years from one Ohio parish. What's the secret? Here, we discuss it with CNA writer Mary Farrow. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor and co-host for Register Radio. Matthew, you are all about movies, and these days I hardly ever get to watch them, even if they are Disney. and so, really, I want to bring you into this discussion big time, Matthew.
You're absolutely right. I have to confess, though, that increasingly these days, I'm almost ashamed to admit that I love movies, just because there seem to be so many bad movies and so many rehashes and sequels and franchises. But this has been already a record-setting box office year for some movies and pretty dismal for others, I think, especially of Marvel's Avengers Endgame, which has earned about $1 billion already just in domestic sales. And then another Marvel hit, Captain Marvel, has earned more than $450 million. But I'm eager to talk with our guest today because while I may be a fan of movies, he is a true expert in them.
Yes, Deacon Stephen Graydonis joins us. He's been the Register film critic for many years. And so, Deacon Stephen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's good to be here. Hi, Matthew.
So here we are, another summer. We tend to do this each year to just check in and see what should we watch this summer. How does this year compare to the last few years in terms of our summer fare?
Well, it seems as if Disney is, you know, just increasingly becoming the juggernaut, the 800-pound gorilla that swallowed Hollywood. They're dominating the market. They've got their superhero franchise, which is going strong with Avengers Endgame, but Spider-Man Far From Home is right around the corner in July. Their cartoon remakes are going strong. Dumbo is long forgotten. Aladdin is in theaters now. The Lion King is coming in July. And if none of that is to your taste, Toy Story 4 is coming in June. This is, you know, it's very much a mixed game. I did enjoy Avengers Endgame. It finally put a cap on this story that Marvel has been telling over many years. And it really kind of, for me, showcased the strengths and the weaknesses of this franchise. The strengths are some very complex and interesting and really ambitious storytelling. On the limitation side, I would say, you know, this is really a mega blockbuster franchise that isn't really about anything. It doesn't have any real subtext or any real themes. When I think of the blockbusters that I grew up with, Star Wars and Indiana Jones, you know, these movies had a sense of thematic resonance and even of transcendence. You know, there was God, there was mystery, sure. There was religion. And all of that seems very carefully excluded from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, and I mean, Disney in general, we've heard a lot about should we be boycotting Disney? Is that all part of the problem here?
When it comes to boycotts, you know, like practically all large corporations today, Disney does some things that we like and other things that we don't. And for decades, Catholics and other Christians have argued for or against boycotting Disney and many other corporations. Some boycotts are well-planned or well-targeted and change corporate behavior. Other times, not so much. You know, all my life, Christians have been talking about boycotting Disney, and they've only gotten bigger. So if someone wants to boycott Disney, more power to them, but I don't think you're going to change
it. It's not working, right? It's just not working.
You know, and then there are people who, you know, as a matter of personal conscience, want to avoid participation in evil. And again, more power to them. I would just say be aware that all of our actions have mixed consequences downstream, good and bad. You can't buy a tube of toothpaste at the supermarket or live in the world in any way without contributing in some way to some kind of evil effect. And moral theology allows for that. So the bottom line is it's a question for personal prudential judgment.
Okay. Well, let's. I guess if we moved on from Disney, is there anything else good this summer?
You know, I think for me, the most exciting films are the ones that are off the beaten path. In particular, I want to recommend a couple of documentaries, one that's in theaters now and one that's coming in August. The one in theaters now is Amazing Grace. This is an Aretha Franklin gospel concert. Her concert album, recorded in 1972 at the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church in Los Angeles, became the best-selling gospel album of all time. The film director, Sidney Pollack, was there, and he actually filmed it, but for technical reasons, he never finished the film. All these years later, it's finally been finished. You can go, if you live in a city with an art house theater or a very large multiplex, you might be able to find it. Amazing Grace. It is a profoundly spiritual experience. I found myself praying while I was watching it. About halfway through, I pulled up my phone and I began saying my evening prayer because it just seemed really fitting to me. You know, maybe as a film critic, I should have been keeping my eyes glued to the screen, but I couldn't help closing my eyes because it was just so prayerful. The other documentary, One Child Nation, which is coming later this summer, this is I saw it at the Sundance Film Festival. This is an amazing synthesis of political expose, of personal journey, of cultural inquiry. Xiaoling Zhang, who grew up in China under the one-child policy and really rethought it when she came to America and became pregnant with her first child, went back to China and interviewed her family members, neighbors, government officials, and really explores just the devastating cost and the amazing human rights abuses that were involved in China's one-child policy, One Child Nation, fantastic documentary.
Well, it's interesting because the book has always been that the assumption has been that summer is a time for less serious films. Do you see a change at all in the way that Hollywood is approaching summer, that there really is just potentially more interest in so-called serious films?
I think there's always going to be serious films trickling throughout the whole year. Summer is really when the focus is on the big films, and then autumn is when we begin to think more about the awards contenders. But there's always thoughtful fare in theaters if you go out and look for it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the One Child Nation, really, it's an opportune time, especially with the Vatican's change of policy with regard to China, but really to understand what's still going on in China. I think it's an opportune time. That's one film I would really like to see. Matthew, I cut you off when I jumped in. So,
well, I was going to say that it's interesting that we have these serious films, but then you have this perpetuation of some of the franchises. And you were talking about that there isn't really that much that's transcendent these days. And Star Wars, now we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves into the fall with this wrap-up film for the Star Wars trilogy that we've been sort of suffering through. But is there this, do you see any potential transcendent types of franchises in the offing? Anything from DC, for example?
I don't think DC has a clue what they're doing. I don't think they have any idea what their next move is going to be. And that's potentially good. I mean, it could be that the next DC film is going to go in some completely unexpected direction and that we'll find, you know, some kind of meaning or depth in other franchises. I'm not looking for great things from Godzilla King of the Monsters or Men in Black International. Dark Phoenix, the last film, probably the final film in Fox's X-Men franchise, that could be interesting. For me, the X-Men films have always been among the most morally resonant, and especially around the character of Professor Charles Xavier, as played by Patrick Stewart in the first films. Of all comic book characters on the big screen in the modern era, he's the one who, for me, has the most articulate moral principles and really embodies an inspiring ideal. The later films haven't quite matched up to that, but I'll be interested to see if this last film really kind of returns to that theme.
So, Deacon Stephen, what did you think about Shazam?
Enjoyed Shazam on many levels, but particularly as a counterpoint to the secularity, I would almost say the aggressive secularity of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the fact that it takes place in a universe where people have creche scenes out on their lawns at Christmas time, Joseph and Mary and the wise men, and they do, and it's a wonderful portrayal of a foster family, as you said, but then also they do say a grace before meals. It's not a conventional grace, and they kind of ad-lib it every time. But those elements of ordinary, real-world, matter-of-fact religiosity, I think, resonate especially powerfully in today's cultural landscape.
And, of course, really, this is an area where I would watch. I don't watch too much Disney, but there are other family fare films on the ticket this year. What are some of those that that I might go and see? I know one of them's caught my eye already. It's in the theaters now, A Dog's Journey. How was it? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, A Dog's Journey has been marketed very much to our audience, to Catholics and Christians, and they're kind of aiming for a middle America feel. It's the sequel to A Dog's Purpose. These are both based on bestsellers by W. Bruce Cameron. And these films tell a story it's a human journey, but seen through a dog's eyes. The twist being through a dog's eyes that is reincarnated from one dog to another.
Oh, gosh.
So the dog bonds with a human, but then eventually the dog dies, but he comes back, and his job is to try to find his human again and, you know, kind of guide them where they're supposed to be. Dennis Quaid, who played the grown-up Ethan from the original film, a boy who grows up with a dog who starts out as a golden retriever, but later he's a Saint Bernard. Now the dog passes on to his granddaughter, CJ, and then he's trying to help her find her way in life. You know, this is kind of schmaltzy, and it's the kind of thing that I think, I think of my dad watching this film and liking the way that it ends. But for me, there was so much darkness and disturbing content along the way. You know, CJ's mother is abusive and neglectful. She drinks too much. CJ gets mixed up with a boyfriend who's abusive. And at one point, there's a really scary scene where he's chasing her in his car. She has a car crash, and it's really, you know, and this is in a PG movie where there are, like, you know, poop jokes and so forth for the kids. And I'm like,
what a strange mixture. Yeah.
That? It doesn't seem to have an audience.
What a strange mixture.
Well, I have to ask real quick. So you don't consider that the franchise Fast and Furious would be one of those transcendent franchises?
Well, you know, what I can say for the Fast and Furious franchise, and this is something that it has in common a little bit with the Marvel films, is that to the extent that it has a unifying theme, the theme is family. And, it's a simplistic theme, the idea that in family relationships, in our commitment to one another, and even with a certain degree of spirituality, you know, grace before meals and simple things like that, I think that the films would not work as well as they do without at least that vestigial element of meaning.
Yeah, if there's one movie, though, that you are eager to see over the summer that you perhaps haven't seen already, what would it be?
Looking forward to the summer, I'm not seeing that much that I'm really excited about. There are a few films coming in the fall. Ang Lee has a movie with Will Smith, a science fiction thriller called Gemini Man, and I'm always interested in whatever Ang Lee does. I know that some people will also, you know, people are going to be looking forward to Toy Story 4. I think that's probably my most fearfully anticipated movie. Then later in the fall, Frozen 2 is coming out from Disney, and that for me is more just in the fearful category. There's a Downton Abbey movie coming later this fall, and Tom Hanks plays Mr. Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Right. Well, plus Sonic the Hedgehog.
Well, there you go. Well, we've got a pretty good preview. Thank you, Deacon Stephen. And Any of our listeners who'd like to know more about Deacon Stephen Greidanis' film criticisms or advices, you can go to decentfilms.com or, of course, ncregister.com and take a look at his blog. When we come back, Matthew and I talk to CNA writer Mary Farrow about one Ohio parish that has produced 7 priests in 7 years. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
This Easter season, read for faith, read for truth, read for life by giving yourself the gift of EWTN's National Catholic Register. Easter inaugurates a joyous season of hope and renewal that brings us closer to God. Gain a deeper understanding of His love and providence in reading the Register. Make this Easter season even more meaningful. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get your 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
I listened to you for about 6 months now, and you've really got my mind turning on my faith and my doctrine and my beliefs. Came to know Christ through a Pentecostal church, and just listening to the beliefs of the Catholic faith and had me really reflect on what I believe and what the truth was. So I'm kind of leaning.
Making a difference. EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. Welcome back. Our next guest on this show is recently wrote a story, and it's got a wonderful theme, and it's the theme of vocations, which we absolutely love at the Register. But this one was written by Catholic News Agency. It's a parish, St. Mary's in Hudson, Ohio. They have ordained 7 priests in 7 years. What a feat. And this story was written by Catholic News Agency's Mary Farrow, formerly known as Mary Rysek. She recently got married. She's their features reporter, and she works out of their Denver office. Welcome to Register Radio, Mary.
Thanks for having me on, Jeanette.
This is a great story. I guess I'll ask the obvious question, but why did you guys pursue it?
Sure, yeah. So we found their picture on Twitter. Someone, I believe a priest who used to be from that parish posted this photo on Twitter, and it's really cool. They've got all the 7 priests standing there, and they're each holding a sign with the year that they were ordained. and it's one thing to have 7 priests, you know, in an ordination class, but it's another for one priest for 7 years coming from one parish. That's kind of an unheard of thing. So and people love vocation stories, and so we decided to just reach out and see who we could talk to on this. So yeah,
well, it's a hopeful story. I mean, and we need that. You know, we've had a rough year. It's been a rough year for the priesthood, for the clergy in general. So it's great to have these good news stories. It feels good for us as editors and as writers to be able to focus on something like this. I love the title, 7 Priests Ordained in 7 Years. What's the secret sauce at this Ohio parish? And so, Mary, what is the secret sauce? What did you discover as you talked to people about this parish?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I talked to 3 of the 7 guys, and what I thought was interesting was all 3 of them mentioned really similar things. There was kind of a theme of 3 different things. The first one was that because they were from this parish, they knew seminarians. They had guys that they knew who were already in seminary that they could ask questions, they could look up to, they could see that, you know, they were happy and thriving. And so I guess before this group of 7, there was one guy, I believe his name is Father Flynn. He was kind of the first fool, as one of the priests called him. And so he was ordained in 2008, and he kind of kicked things off there. And from there, the 7 kind of followed after him a few years later. And so that was one thing. The other thing that everyone mentioned was they have a really strong youth group program at their parish. They use Life Teen, which is a pretty popular youth group program, and they just were very welcoming to youth. They said they wanted to make sure that, you know, they felt like the parish was their home, that they were welcome anytime. They assisted at Mass in all kinds of different ways, and they just had a really strong program there. And the seminarians would come back and help with that. So they would come back over their, you know, Christmas breaks or summer breaks and just really be present to and available to the youth there. So, again, that familiarity helped. And then the last thing that they all said was that someone asked them about it. Someone personally either invited them to, like, a retreat, or they said, hey, whatever their name is, they called them by name and said, I think you would make a great priest, or I think you should at least consider, you know, going to the seminary or whatever. So they said that personal invitation made a huge difference in them actually taking it seriously and being like, oh, maybe this is something I should consider. So, yeah, those three things were kind of thematic throughout everyone's response.
So this is we ended up covering this same story. This is one of those situations where Catholic News Agency and the Register really didn't talk about what they were going to cover, and we both covered this story. So you guys came out with it first. That's why I asked you to be on the show. But also Peter Jesser Smith, our features writer, or one of our writers, has covered it as well. The title of his story is The St. Mary's Seven, How One Parish Gave the Church Seven Priests in 7 Years. And, you know, he noted the same thing in the way we termed it in one of our subheads is vocations begets vocations. And that's what one of the priests at the parish said. And Mary, you know, covering the church for these years that you've been covering, writing for the Register, you've probably seen this before. I mean, you've seen how this happens. You know, covering features for CNA, what are the kind of trends you've seen in vocation stories?
Sure, yeah. Just even in my own life, just personally, I taught Totus Tuus for a couple of years before I was a features writer. I did that in college in the Lincoln Diocese in Nebraska, and I just actually got back from ordinations weekend in the Lincoln Diocese. Mm-hmm. Three good friends of mine were all ordained this year, and they were all, you know, part of the Totus Tuus program, friends in college, and they are three out of probably six really close friends of mine who have become priests, who I've been privileged to be, you know, at their ordinations and First Mass. And my husband, who's from California, remarked that he's never been to an ordination of someone who he knew, you know, before they were priests and now they're a priest. So I think there is just something about knowing someone who's done it before and kind of laid the path there for you. There's a familiarity, and it makes sense, right? I think that's why people are attracted to marriage if they grew up with good marriages around them, and it's how people get attracted to religious life too. Is your holiness is attractive, and if you're holy, you're thriving in your life in all areas. You're not just praying all the time, but you're just a well-rounded human being, and you can. It's most attractive and effective when you can see that in real life. Right in front of you. So right. I've definitely seen that in my personal life, for sure. Yeah.
Vocations is about is also about community, and that's what you're talking about here. Matthew, jump on in. I heard you try to jump in.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that one of the things that was especially striking to me is the role of the personal invitation. And there was that stat some years back that 70% of men had thought about a vocation to the priesthood, but no one had ever asked them. So it seems like one of the secrets here is actually inviting them to consider a vocation.
Yeah, and one of the priests that I talked to mentioned that it's biblical. Jesus called his disciples by name. It's not something that is foreign to us as Christians. I think there has been something I've experienced is kind of a hesitation of maybe over-pressuring people. So I've kind of seen that on the one end. You don't want to claim that you know someone's vocation because you don't, but the personal invitation just to at least consider and look into it. I thought it was interesting that one of the priests that I talked to said, actually, I had been thinking about it personally for a while, but I was too afraid to say anything. But once someone else said, you know, I see qualities in you that would make a good priest, he was like, okay, I'm not crazy. This isn't just something I'm making up in my head. This is something that other people could see too, which I thought made a lot of sense. So
Absolutely. And I have that experience too, Mary, of, you know, someone, if, you know, sometimes feeling pressured by people who think, oh, you have a vocation and you've discerned it and you realize you don't. But you're better off if they're asking. I think that's definitely the case. It's welcoming and gosh, we need each other. You know, we need that community. I think that's so much of the point here. And so, yeah, it's truly awesome to see these kind of stories to help us right now in this moment. You mentioned Lincoln, Mary, and I was thinking of that. You do have a wonderful example of a culture of vocations, I think, in Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, they have many, many priests, and they call them homegrown priests. I don't remember the statistics, but I do know that most of the priests of the Diocese of Lincoln are from that diocese. They're not transplants, which you do see in other dioceses. In Denver, for example, where you live and where I lived for a long time, many of the priests would come from outside. You know, they were transplants into the diocese. But in Lincoln, you've got homegrown priests. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm thinking of all three guys that I know who are just ordained, and they're all from the Lincoln Diocese. The other friends of mine that have been ordained in recent years are all from the Lincoln Diocese. So, yeah, they're all local, and I guess, yeah, being from there, I hadn't really considered how strange or unique that is, but yeah, we definitely just have, and it totally is, vocations beget vocations, and there's a really strong just community in the Lincoln Diocese. People are often surprised when I say, actually, Catholics are, population-wise, in the minority in the Lincoln Diocese, but it's a strong minority. They have a strong Catholic identity and a strong sense of, you know, we're a community and we're in this together and we need each other. And yeah, it's just a strong culture there. So yeah. And I know even just in my own experience, my cousin is a religious sister. And so I always had that example growing up. And so it was always like, you know, nuns were real people to me. They
right.
were people that I saw when I visited my cousin and when my cousin came over. And I remember at my high school graduation, someone commented who wasn't Catholic and had never met a nun. And they were like, she's a real person and I can have a conversation with her and she's funny. And I'm like, well, yeah. So I think it's just, it kind of demystifies it. That's what one of the
exactly.
priests said, who I talked to for this piece.
And that's part
yeah.
of our role. That's
kind
part
of
our,
away that idea. Yeah.
That's part of our role as writers, is to just demystify this stuff. So Mary Farrow from Catholic News Agency, thank you so much for joining us for the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jeanette. It's been great.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. From Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.